Welcome to the Taming Tribulation Podcast. I am your host, Wyatt Hammond.
And I'm your co-host, Jeremy Crossley.
In Season 2, we are using biblical stories about trials and tribulations that characters have gone through, how they confronted them and overcame their own personal obstacles, so they can become the people that God uses for His purpose. Not perfect people, but imperfect people being used to do His will.
Our intention with these stories is to pass on to the listener the understanding that God uses the hardest and most difficult moments in our lives to refine us into the people we were meant to be.
We hope that you can be encouraged to see where God can use your tribulations for His purpose. Hello and welcome to episode 2, season 2 of Taming Tribulation. In episode 1 of this season, Jeremy and I read through chapter 16 to 17 of 1 Samuel, and that was the beginning of David's story where he gets anointed by Saul, and we went through that story, and now we are going on through that story from 17 to chapter 18, and today reading about David and Goliath carrying on David's story. We will start reading at chapter 17. So the Bible says, starting in chapter 17, "Now the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Soko in Judah. They pitched their camp at Ephes-Demim between Soko and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the Valley of Elah and drew up their battle line to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites another, with the valley between them. A champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits in a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, 'Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he is able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us.' Then the Philistine said, 'This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other.' On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified." So what I imagine at this part of the story is how terrifying that would be to be an Israelite, and you're on one side of the mountain and you're like, okay, yeah, we got a couple thousand, they got a couple thousand. And I think the actual story is that the Israelites were pretty well outnumbered. But you know, they still had a whole army, and they're like, okay, you know, we're going to fight, and we got a chance here. You know, we're going to let our armies do battle. And then this one guy comes out, this massive giant. Yeah. And he's like, our armies don't need to fight. Just send one down. And let's just do it this way. And you'll be our slaves if he wins, and or if I win, and vice versa. And then your whole army is like, so who's going to do this? Like, I'm not, like, you see the size of that guy? I'm not going to do it. And then everyone's terrified, and there's nobody that's big or strong enough to take care of this guy. You'd be like, okay, well, that's the end of it. They want to fight one-on-one. We don't have anybody. I'm not going to do it. Like, so did we just lose the war? That'd be so terrifying, actually imagining being there at that moment and everybody's cowering down. What do you think, Jeremy?
No, it's funny that when I hear this, the first thing I remember, and is a little bit off the page, but there's a scene from the movie Troy. I don't know if you've ever seen it, where you movie. Have one side of the army and the other side of the army, and you got this big, massive jack dude, and he's got scars and battle wounds all over him, and you're like, who the heck is going to fight this guy? And I can just imagine, like, everyone's quivering and they're like, I don't want to fight that dude. I mean, this guy is a massive giant. And I could literally vision that battle scene, like, with the exception of the hills and the valleys. But I was like, that's exactly what this was like. And he's just challenging them. And he's like, no man is going to be able to kill me. And I see that as this scene. And I'm just like, yeah, that's pretty tough. You're pretty much walking to your death. And not only are you walking to your death, essentially you're also allowing your countrymen to be sold off and become part of the Philistine army. So it's like,
right. Like, the stakes are pretty high.
Yeah. Like, am I going to be the one?
It's not just, hey, if I go out and lose to this giant, then they know they're superior and they go home and we go home. It's like, hey, go out and fight, and if you lose, then you're all our slaves forever. And I'd be pretty careful about the Israelites who we're picking to go out there, right?
Exactly. And it's not only is that, is it like, it's like my wives and my children will be, you know, slaves and sexual, like,
right,
things. Like, I don't want my family to be subject to that. So
it's the worst possible outcome. Like, I would imagine, like, most people would rather them and their, especially at that time, would rather their families just be killed than be sold into slavery for the rest of their lives. Like,
exactly.
Just finish us off now. That's merciful, right? And so it's like, really, this is, he's saying, worst case, like, we will do the worst possible thing we can do to you if you lose fighting Goliath. The stakes are that high. It's the end of not only your freedom, but your family's freedom. And you don't just get to fight your way out of this. You know, our armies don't battle. I just kill one of your guys, and that's the end of it. Like, it's a pretty dark day for Israel if this story goes the other way, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. It's wild. It's wild to see.
Okay. Starting in verse 12. Now, David was the son of an Ephrathite named Jesse, who was from Bethlehem in Judah. Jesse had 8 sons, and in Saul's time, he was very old. Jesse's 3 oldest sons had followed Saul to the war. The firstborn was Eliab, the second Abinadab, and the third Shema. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's sheep at Bethlehem. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand. Now Jesse said to his son David, take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd, loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed. He reached the camp as the army was growing out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath the Philistine, champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. Now the Israelites had been saying, do you see how this man keeps coming out? He comes out to defy Israel. The king will give him great wealth. The king will give great wealth to the man who kills him. He will also give him his daughter in marriage, and he will exempt his family from taxes in Israel. David asked the man standing near him, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? They repeated to him what they had been saying and told him, this is what will be done for the man who kills him. When Eliab, David's oldest brother, heard him speaking with the men, he burned with anger at him and asked, why have you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know how conceited you are and how wicked your heart is, and you came down only to watch the battle. Now what have I done? Said David. I can't even speak. He then turned away to someone else and brought up the same matter, and the men answered him as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul, and Saul sent for him. So at this point in the story, David's a nobody. He's already been appointed a king, but really only him and few other people know it. And I'm sure even at this point he's like, okay, great. You know, I had this kingly experience, but nothing's changed. Like, I mean, I'm still a nobody. So he's at home with his father. Everyone else is at battle. You can imagine kind of what a loser you'd feel being like, hey, all these real men are off at battle and I'm tending to these sheep. And he finally gets out. I would imagine, like, when his father tells him, like, hey, you know, bring this stuff to your brothers, he'd be pumped. He's like, yeah, I actually get to go, like, check this thing out. Like, I get to go see the battle. Like, maybe his brother was actually right when his brother chastised him to say, you're only here to watch. I'd be like, he probably was. Right.
Yeah.
So he goes to bring his brothers these things. And when he is at the battlefield, he hears Goliath say, come out and fight me. If you don't, you'll be our slaves. We'll be your slaves. like, again, trying to put yourself in that actual position. You're just a nobody. You show up to the battlefield. There's tens of thousands of people getting ready to fight. And you look out on the field and you hear this one guy yelling. And this has been going on for 40 days. Everyone else is already like, yeah, dude, we know what's going on here. Like, this isn't anything new. This is the first time you're hearing it, right? And you're like, and so for 40 days, no one's stepped up, or like there's been nobody that's done anything about this. Like, okay, so, you know, I would imagine that is where, not where God started to use David, but a point of David's life where God was like, okay, this is a turning point, right? Where everybody's, all these soldiers that are trained soldiers that have been doing this for decades, probably killed 100 men each, are all saying, I'm not going out there to fight him. Yeah. And you got to wonder what was going on in David's soul and mind when he thought, oh, this is my moment. Right? Because if there's no David and Goliath, there's no story. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
Like, it's like there has to be an opportunity for us to prove ourselves when those moments come. And this is his is a lot more dramatic than I think than most people's are. Most people are an appointed king and have to kill a giant. And, you know, it's a pretty intense story. But if David gives into fear here and says, man, well, look at all these guys in armor. This isn't up to me. Somebody else will take care of this. I just came here to bring food to my brothers. And I'm going to go back to my dad, tend the sheep. This isn't even my battle. I'm not even wearing any armor. That'd be so easy to do. Everyone expected him to just go home. Like, what are you doing here, kid? Right, so what stands out to you here, Jeremy?
Well, the whole concept, I mean, first of all, Goliath was like destroying the people of Israel by going out. It said morning and evening. Every morning and evening. So it was two times a day for 40 days and everyone's still sitting there, you know, shivering. And his father's just like, you know what? They've been sitting there. They must, I can't imagine what the father's even thinking. He's like, they've been sitting there for 40 days. They need something to eat. Go give them some food. And again, with the 40 days concept, you know, it's always something with 40 in the Old Testament is phenomenal to me.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, I seriously doubt that's a coincidence, right? That this is how many other things in the biblical story come with 40 days, 40 nights, whether it's evening and morning or that kind of thing. It's, yeah. You know, twice a day for 40 days, 40 nights. There's, I'm sure some more intelligent biblical scholars than us would have something to say about that, but we just think it's interesting.
Yeah, and the loaves of bread too, and I just think of so many different concepts of where that's used, and I just think it's amazing. Yeah, he's probably going, like, I don't know if he's walking. He's probably walking. I don't know what he's doing, but he's like, hey, take care of my sheep. And it's obviously not a huge, like, amount of sheep. It's probably just, like, maybe a few, because it doesn't say it's a lot. It says it's a few sheep that they have, right? And so he hands them off, and he's like, all right, we're going to go. And as he's going, just hearing this guy like slander everybody must be like, what the heck? So I think that's wild too, on top of that. And then, of course, his brother is like, what are you doing here? Like, I've been out here for 40 days listening to this, and I'm the one fighting, and you're at home. You know what I mean? Like, I can envision that as like, I've been working my butt off for months and months and on end while you're sitting at home, you know, playing video games type of mentality. It's
playing
like,
with the sheep.
Yeah. You're coming here to like, give
you
us
think bread, you're being helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's like,
to
like,
be helpful, you know, come join us. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be so annoying. I can really empathize with the older brother here. Cause you're the older brother, you're a soldier. You've been on the battlefield. You've been getting ready for this war, having to hear Goliath do this 40 days, 40 nights. Everybody talking about who's going to do this. Your brother shows up. And David probably does have the air about him, like, oh, look how helpful I'm being, right? And
yeah.
And so he comes with all this food, and he's like, hey guys, you're welcome. You know, look how helpful I am. And they're like, dude, we couldn't care less about this food. We got bigger problems, right? And like he's probably thinking, oh, they'll give me a thank you. And suddenly his brother's saying, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah.
You're just here to watch. You're not actually here to help. And it's such a human part of that story, right? Where so much of the story is like just very, you know, a little guy kills a giant with a stone, and you're like, yeah, it's a real and truly unbelievable story. But this part of it is just, is like so real. Like he shows up and his jealous older brother is, or maybe, you know, it's maybe just his normal older brother is just saying, dude, we don't need you here. Like,
but what I think is it's even more funny is the brother knows about him being anointed by Samuel. So mm-hmm. like, I can't imagine like what the brother's probably thinking, like, this is the anointed guy, like this loser out of all of us. Like, I'm huge. I'm like, remember the oldest brother is like, he's like quote unquote handsome and strong and he's a warrior and he's, you know, and then he's probably feeling bitter. He's probably feeling bitter about what Samuel did. And he's just aggravated with his brother. And then his brother probably is in a moment of his life is where he's like, you know, I got to prove to these people I can be who Samuel said I could be. And he's probably at the, that's what yeah. I would be at. So I'd be like, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of being harassed by my brothers. You know, they're way older than me. They're warriors. And I'm just sitting back, you know, tending the sheep. So this is probably my moment where I got to step up and face my own fear in life. And I think that just brings back all of us, right? Being in fear mm-hmm. of anything, you know, it could be a giant. It could be an average sized person. It could be, you know, anything, right?
A job.
Anything. Yeah. Like you can
conversation you're scared of having.
Yeah, exactly. Or even at work, like standing up to your supervisors when something's gone bad, like morally in your heart, and being able to stand up and be like, hey, like we got to talk about this, or anything. Standing up to a father, standing up to a mother, and yeah. say, hey,
not everything is killing a giant, but yeah. You know, we all, but it's certainly a lesson to take into our own lives that, you know, that's the attitude we need to have when we're faced with something that feels like a giant is, okay, well, where's my slingshot and stone?
Yep. 100%. I agree. And I think it's, just something to follow through with.
Okay. So let's continue on starting in verse 32. David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him. Saul replied, you are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of the Philistine. Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around, because he was not used to them. I cannot go in these, he said to Saul, because I'm not used to them. So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose five smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with the sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bare in front of him kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and despised him. He said to David, am I a dog that you come out, that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. Come here, he said, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals. David said to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from the sheath. After he killed him, he cut off his head with the sword. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran. Then the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout and pursued the Philistines to the entrance of Gath and to the gates of Ekron. Their dead were strewn along the Sherem road to Gath and Ekron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines, they plundered their camp. David took the Philistine head and brought it to Jerusalem. He put the Philistine's weapon in his own tent. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is that young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, your majesty, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son that young man is." As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with David still holding the Philistine's head. "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem." So what stands out to you there, Jeremy?
The whole concept of, like what we said, facing your fears and going out there, right? I think what was brilliant about it is one thing that actually really clicked to me, it's just said God doesn't need sword or spears to win a battle, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's so used to brute strength in it or skill instead of submitting to what God will do. I think there is a big, huge testament of faith. And yeah, I just admire David's faith. And obviously, if anyone ever read this story on their own time, they would know, like, how did this guy just have the confidence and the faith to just go out there and do it? And that's all he needed, right? All he needed was the faith that he needed to step out in front. And I think we can all relate to that, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the faith to know that God had something better for him, right? That if he stood out on that battlefield and did this, that he had enough faith to know, okay, I'm not gonna lose. My people aren't gonna be sold into slavery. I'm gonna win, and this is gonna be the start of something for me. And knowing that God had his back, and knowing that he had a deeper plan for him, and the plan was not for him to be killed and his people to be sold into slavery.
Right? Exactly.
Like, that's like I was anointed king, told by a prophet, this is what I'm meant to do, and it's like, this isn't the end. Like, that's, mm-hmm. I have enough faith in my God to know that what happened was meant to happen, and what I'm, and this is the moment I prove myself, and that he chose the right person, right? And and like, if it, a lot of the time you just don't, the little things in our lives where you're tempted to go the wrong way, or something comes up and you react unrighteously. For us, a lot of those moments are the same moments as David and Goliath. It's like, are you going to choose to do the right thing? Do you have enough faith in your God to know that if I choose the right path, there's something bigger here for me? And if I choose the wrong path, like, it's just delaying that story. Like, God's going to use you, and it's what he's going to do, what he's going to do. Just because you go the wrong way a couple times doesn't mean everything goes off path, but you're just making things harder and taking longer. Like, David's story, yes, was probably... like, there wasn't going to be another Goliath if he decided, oh, you know, this isn't my moment and I'm going to go home. And then it's not, and then like, it's not like next year there would be another chance for him to do the David and Goliath story, right? And thankfully for us, we do have many chances to make the right choice. But even those little moments where you have to choose right or wrong, it's the same thing. Do you trust in your God enough to know that if you do what scares you, he has your back and has something bigger in store for you? And those are the kind of things where, you know, when you look at these stories, it's like, I'm not David. I'm not fighting a giant, right? How can this relate to my life? And that's how it is, whatever you choose is what God is able to use. Right. So.
Yeah. What I think is amazing about that too, is like the concept of people saying, well, you know, even I've had that same perception, right? Who's this God that allows this to happen or allows that to happen? Like, I did this by myself. Just that arrogance of saying, like, hey, like, I made my path. Like, we make our own choices. Yeah. But God intervenes in so many ways that we don't even know. And yeah. I mean, I just think it's remarkable hearing people say, like, I've done all this, I've done that. And I was like, and you've also made your mistakes. And look how much tribulation you had to get over, right?
People love to take credit for their wins and blame others for their losses, right?
For their losses, so,
yeah.
I think it's hilarious because once they feel like they're on top of the hilltop, they're like, I got myself there, you know, they're like, I did it. But they once they're in that valley, they're like begging for things to get better. And it's just, you know, I don't want to go off topic a little bit, but we're in a moment right now where people, you know, in today's society and in American culture, you know, we have Tom Brady, who was on top, the GOAT of all football. And then he is now going through, well, he already solidified his divorce. You know what I mean? And now you can see his performance. His performance has been down and everyone's talking about his performance and all that stuff. It's like, this is an example. Like, it's sad to see someone who was on the hilltop and then be humbled by stuff like that. And I think that's just a remembrance of all of us. You know, even when we think we're above, you know, our average pace, you know what I mean? We could always be humbled to get back down. And what I really love about the story too is the best part, I think, is Saul tried giving David his armor. Like, he tried giving his armor. He tried saying, like, here, take this. You're going to need this. And David, like, puts it on. He's like, nah, this can't work. This isn't my armor. And he's like, I'm going to use what I've been using my entire life. And, again, that's having faith, just that he can do it the way he was shown, using his gifts that God gave him. And, like, he's sitting there with confidence. Like, I got God on my side. He's like, this is the weapon I've been using to scare off lions and bears. I'm going to choose this to go to war with. And I mean, look at the product of it, right? And again, going back to the, we don't need swords or spears or javelins. Like, he got a stone and he has God. And I just think it's wild to see. It's wild to witness.
Yeah. And it's not even like, that, you know, he had to use something. And I'm sure there's a lot of symbolism to the stone, but just like that, like you just made a great point there, that he puts on that armor and says, you know, so he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose five smooth stones from the stream, put them in the pouch of a shepherd's bag with a sling, and approached the Philistine. And he had to use something to kill the guy. It wasn't a sling or a stone, but it's something that he knew he had won other battles with. And it's like, when you have a strategy to stay faithful and make the right choices, when bigger monster, when giants come, don't change strategy. Don't start picking up new weapons. Like, use the same ones that you have. Do what works.
It's a gift. And I even just hearing it too, he took the stones and put it in the shepherd's bag. If anyone knows anything about who the shepherd is, there's so many biblical references to who the shepherd is. And obviously in this context, they're probably talking about David, but there's also a correlation with who else is considered the shepherd, right? Jesus, he says it, you know, he says it all the time. You know, I'm reading a book right now about Psalms 23, and David wrote Psalms. So he's talking about God is the shepherd. And I just think it's such an interesting comparison to it. And he took the stones and put it in his shepherd's bag. So, like, the shepherd is the one who kept what he needed intact. He held them, right? Or it held them. And he, you know, withdrew it from the shepherd's bag. And the symbolism is just there. The symbolism is like he's using God's all over the place. Creation to use it as a weapon to win. And I just think it's so wild. Just thinking about it, I'm just like, yeah, no, he used his gifts. And some of us may not have gifts of a slingshot, but we do have gifts, right? And people get to understand, like, not get bitter with other people's gifts, but to accept the gifts that they have, right? Like, I'm not going to be like, oh, you know, that person can sing better than me. That's their gift. I don't have that gift. My gift is, I can be more direct with people. But have the understanding, like, your gifts are your gifts, right? And not get bitter about
it. Yeah, like, it goes both ways, like, especially for David in that story, and being the little guy and knowing, okay, just because I don't have, just because I'm not tall and just because I'm not as big as Goliath, big as my brothers, I still have something that can solve this problem, and I still have value to bring, even if it's not that answer. But, and then same on his brother's side, to say, oh, look how big and strong I am, and look how much armor I have and these weapons I have. But looking at his brother and saying, just because he doesn't have those things, look how much value he can bring. and just with a stone he can kill him. He looks small and weak, but there's still a lot that he can accomplish, right? And so goes both ways with that one.
Yeah, definitely. And look at the reward that's been given to him. You know, when he takes down, I love how he uses his own sword to chop off his head too.
Yeah,
which is like a slap in the face, like extra disrespect. Like here's for you to be humbled, bro. And whatcha, you know, there it goes. And I think, yeah, it brings up the great point of like, doesn't matter how big you are, how great you look, how strong you are, like anybody can be used for anything. And it's humbling. I think it's great. I think it should definitely instill faith in people that they're used. But I mean, I'm sure this guy was just like, I hope I can do this. He's like, I believe I can do this. I'm going to do my best. And then he hit him perfectly in the head. And I can imagine the crowd just being like, what just happened?
Yeah. What the heck just happened? Being the armies on both sides, like being the Israelites, and you're like, okay, we've been sitting here for 40 days. We might as well let this kid do it because nobody else is doing it. So take our shot. He's the only one that stepped up to do it. So we'll let him. And then, but you're like, hey, I mean, we're pretty sure we're all going to about to be slaves here. And then on the Philistine side, you're like, oh man, this is the kid they chose. We're about to win this thing, right? Like, they're about to be all our slaves. We're gonna have the whole Israelite army to use, and you just be pumped. You'd be like, man, this is the kid they chose. This is awesome, guaranteed win. And then suddenly, the next moment, he takes out a slingshot, flings a rock, and goes into his skull, and he's dead. And they chop off his head. Suddenly, you're all running the other direction. Like, it's just gotta go. That's you're like, crap. That did not go as I thought it would. Right? You were, there was not a single man on that battlefield that thought, oh yeah, this is the answer, right? You can just imagine everybody knew this is the end, but this is nobody else stepped up, and boy were they all wrong. Lots of amazing lessons in that chapter, and really only the beginning of one of the most incredible stories ever. And so we're only getting started, only at chapter 18. Next week, that's the chapter we're going to do, and that is where we will end it there. So thanks for listening to another episode of Taming Tribulation. Catch you next week, everybody.